This American Australia podcast is brought to you by understandinsurance.com.au. Protect your family and your home by preparing for bushfire season now. For tips, visit understandinsurance.com.au.
A bit dusty after the cup, not going to lie. Chris Taylor with me this afternoon.
I'm a bit dusty after last year's cup still.
How was it? Was back it in the studios, yeah, had a great day at the Melbourne Cup yesterday. I only got arrested twice, which is
good.
It was great.
It's good.
Slept in a wheelie bin with some chick who was riding it. It was very weird. It was a long day and a great day. And then my last joke at the end of the day was pretending to carry drugs in front of a police officer who just went, "You're not that funny, pal." So that was, didn't need to mention that part, did I? That was more of an off-air conversation? Yep. Okay, sometimes we forget. On the show today, though, Chris Taylor, we will be doing What Can't You Get Your Head Around? One of my favourite segments to do on radio. So if you've got one and you've got a question that you want partially answered at best, get in early. 133.53. We'll be doing that a little bit later on. And we'll be talking about the race that the nation forgot, which was, of course, the race we did yesterday. But up next, we're going to be talking about a woman who was on television yesterday as part of the Melbourne Cup. And I will say she was one of the most elegant drunks I've ever seen attack a news reporter on television in the last 6 months.
Don't talk about Francesca like that.
I want to kick off talking about something that happened yesterday, not actually at Flemington at the Melbourne Cup, but as part of the Melbourne Cup celebrations at Eagle Farm in Brizzy, of course.
No, I think that's the most interesting race day at Eagle Farm. On the day. Man. I don't look at anything. Any race at Flemington, that's sort of old hat. Nah. Eagle Farm, very interesting card.
Good place.
Just got Shetland ponies running around.
It gets a bit loose. And you know what
it is? Does.
It's like, it is. It's kind of like Queensland meets the Kentucky Derby.
It is.
You know, you just get this kind of feeling like, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm enjoying this.
Because of daylight savings in Queensland, it was still technically Halloween, so all the horses were dressed
just
up.
Weird.
It was like they're all dressed as skeletons. It was brilliant.
Good times. Not enough fluorescent green ties with black shirts for my liking, but, you know, people are trying. Anyway, there was a woman who was captured on Channel 9 News. They were doing a cross, as they do, back to the newsroom, saying, you know, we're here at Eagle Farm, and it's Melbourne Cup, blah, blah, blah. And then this woman just entered the scene.
Some good luck for some people, bad luck for others.
Channel 9, I think you need to know somebody has lost $3.
Really?
Can you bring that to the right foot owner?
I probably wouldn't be able to find them. But if you give it to the security guard.
No, it's important. How dare you? Not at Channel 9. He needs to know.
No, that's not his wallet.
He needs to find the owner.
Oh, you're on the news, love.
That is the first time anyone at Channel 9 has ever turned down free money, too.
Take it for Tara. That's what they should. They should be handing around a hat. It's called Tinsel for Tara.
Yeah, the Tara Brown Rescue Fund.
She's a bit excited. She's obviously had a very, very busy day at the races.
She had a very busy day. But you could sort of spin this as a Good Samaritan gesture. Like, some people who've had a few too many drinks might have pocketed the $3 or put it on race eight.
Mm.
Instead, she's looked for the first journalist she can find.
She's gone to the first person who was wearing a suit that wasn't part of race day and just went, you know what, you're not even wearing lime green.
Well, the journalists are the only people that look vaguely sober and responsible at race day. Because, you know, probably the lost and found desk, they're all gone.
Yep,
like,
gone.
They've been on the Bacardi and rum since 9 a.m. So, you know, maybe she did the right thing. She did find the only sober person at Eagle Farm.
And look, she's made herself a little bit of a hero there. She's been all over the internet and obviously all over the TV as well. But she has made a bit of a tweet of herself on telly. Now, it's arguable that lots of people have done this. You know, you're in the right time or in the right place at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up on the telly. Now, I've done this. And I know a lot of people are going, yeah, your entire career. And you're correct. But one time, Chris, many, many, many years ago, and I don't think I've ever told this story, I was a very young bloke. I wasn't doing comedy. I think I was about 19. And my brother and I went to go and see a theatre show with Greg Fleet, the stand-up, because I was a big Fleety fan.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in a show called Sheer Madness, right? And it was like a written play. Anyway, it was really funny. And this is like early 90s, very early 90s. And we were walking out of the venue and just out of nowhere, this camera crew propped up, right? And there's, you know, when they get people, they do vox pops of people leaving theatre sometimes. They go, what did you think of the movie?
Yeah.
It was that. And I'd never seen one of these before. And this camera crew just jumped out of the darkness, put on the light and they said, what did you think of the play? And I went, it's the best show I've seen in ages. And just then, but had a startled look and jolted forward and looked like I was, there was something physically and mentally wrong with me. I'm not going to lie. I just looked, it was all, because they scared me.
Right.
They used that in the commercial and ran it for 3 months. 3 months. And I would be at home and I'd be getting phone calls from people going, just saw you on telly. Shit, man, it's the best show you've seen in ages, is it, Watsy? And I'm going, oh, I'll go, and they go, you look like you've had a seizure. And right. I went, oh, it was bad. Made an absolute twit of myself.
Just as a bit of a tangent, I actually had a mate who was also made his way onto one of those Vox Pop ads after the movies. And he gave this glowing review. He said, yeah, funniest film I've ever seen. And he'd just actually seen Weekend at Bernie's. What he didn't realise was the people filming the Vox Pops were for an entirely different film. It was like the Wog Boy one.
Not a comedy.
No. But they still used his bit, which is extraordinary.
Listen, I want to open up the phones. 1-333-53 is the number to call. Did you make a twit of yourself on the telly? Now, you don't necessarily have to have been drunk. You could have been like me. You've just been surprised by the camera. Or maybe, you know, you didn't realise that a camera crew was filming and you've gone, you know, up to Grant Denyer or Stevie Jacobs or something like that. You know, they're doing
there was
the
another one last
gone,
year.
Excuse me, do you have any change for parking? Yeah. Oh, sorry, live television.
Well, there was one last year at the Melbourne Cup where I think a woman crash-tackled a police officer or something like that. So there's a bit of a tradition of that. There was one, I always remember, a former colleague here at Triple M, Miff Warhurst, when she was doing Spicks and Specs, she's never lived this down, where you just had to guess the tune. And she's like Little Miss Triple J girl. She's meant to be absolute music.
She knows her music.
And it was as clear as day. They started playing Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana and she just had a mental blank. And she, you know, she's never quite lived it down. But that's sort of, that's on a live TV moment. An example of, you know, when you just make an ass of yourself.
And what's great, and good on you, Triple M, because this is truly why I love you. You'd expect maybe one or two phone calls. No, there is just so many phone calls coming through right now and we love you for it. 1-333-53, when did you make a twit of yourself on the telly?
Merrick has the best callers in Australia.
Look, I was in Europe a couple of years ago backpacking. Got stung by a wasp and started to swell up. I wouldn't have minded if I had got stung on the old fella. A bit of swelling there would be okay. They called the help line in that category. But unfortunately, it was on the leg.
Merrick in Australia. Triple M.
Always the best callers. You good guys are very special, very unique. Chris Taylor with me this afternoon. Taking your calls now on 1-333-53. When did you make a twit of yourself on the telly? Yesterday, there was a young girl who saw an opportunity, a window of opportunity, went, hang on a second, that looks like a television crew doing the news.
Some good luck for some people, bad luck for others.
Channel 9, I think you need to know, somebody has lost $3.
Really?
Can you find that to the rightful owner?
I probably wouldn't be able to find them. But if you give it to the security guy...
No, it's important. How dare you? Not until 9.
We'll just leave it there. I mean, we'll just start attacking a broadcaster for not handing in a wallet. I mean, seriously?
She is brilliant. I mean, she's not only a good Samaritan, she's actually a very keen financial analyst. I mean, she's probably the person that found the deficit in the Australian budget. Like, she goes up to Canberra constantly, how dare you leave this money around?
Yep. She should fill out all of our census forms. Let's get to Greg in Narellan Vale. G'day, Greg.
G'day, Merrick. How are you, mate?
Very good, champ. Great to have you on the show, mate. All right, you've made a twit of yourself on the telly?
Very much so. After the 2004 budget, when Peter Costello said the country should have one for the mother, one for the father, a child for the father, one for the mother, one for the country.
Yes, yes.
The following day when they were doing the feedback from the shopping centres where they speak to all the people.
Yeah.
I was walking back up from a medical appointment of getting in to get the snip.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And?
So my phone went off its nut that night because it was actually broadcast on Channel 7 News.
So hang on, what did you say on the telly, Greg?
So they just said, so how do you feel about Mr. Costello saying one for the father, one for the mother, one for the country? So mate says, no good for me. He said, I've just booked in to get the snip.
I don't reckon you've made a twit of yourself. I reckon you've shown that you've actually done a pretty good line on the news.
Mate, you didn't swear or anything. That's not bad at all. But still, everybody now knows that you've had part of you cut off.
You're extremely honest about your medical position.
Yeah. Let's get to Aaron. Hello, Aaron.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Very good, mate. All right. Have you made a twit of yourself on the telly?
Yeah, it wasn't me. It was my old man.
Oh, great. Sure. Here we go.
Yeah. I was over at some mate's house, and I was in another room, and one of the blokes said, hey, isn't this your dad on the telly? And I went in the room, and it was in Melbourne Tonight with Frankie J. Holden.
Oh, yeah.
And it was around the time when the Full Monty was released. And they'd rounded some blokes up out of the audience and had them doing these rehearsals and then getting their gear off at the end of the show. So, yeah, my old man did the Full Monty.
Oh, no. Oh, please tell me there was pixelation or something. How much of your old man's old fella did you see?
Not too much. They were pretty quick with the hat, so I think it's sort of a bit of a flash, but yeah, you have to have super slow-mo.
Oh, yeah. Plus, you know what the old blokes are like too, Aaron, you know, a little bit can dangle out of the bottom of the hat there. Yeah. You know what I mean? You think it'll totally. Be there, but they're not always aware. It's gravity, I think they call it, Aaron. We probably don't need to discuss it.
If my old man's anything like me, it probably fits in the hat perfectly.
Well, only you would know, Aaron.
Unlike Merrick, who'd be asking for one of those stovepipe hats, the really long the Abraham Lincoln ones.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. Damn right. Let's get to Tony. Hello, Tony.
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, really good. All right, have you made a bit of a twit of yourself on the telly?
I certainly did. It was many years ago, and the social club from where I was working decided we should go to the Bong Bong picnic races.
Sounds good.
Well, here we go.
And I thought to myself, well, I'm not going to drink beer all day. It's going to be too hard. The girls were drinking champagne, so I got on the champagne. They didn't have any glasses, so it was out of the bottle. Channel 9 was doing a cross from Bong Bong. It could have been Ken Callender or someone like that. It was so many years ago.
Yeah.
And he's standing there in front of the betting ring. So I've come staggering in the shot and thought, oh, I'll stand here and watch this. So I've put one bottle under my arm, the other one in the other hand, and leant on the betting board, which was on an easel, and it's gone falling over, and I've gone face first into the mud. What I didn't realise that Mum and Dad were sitting at home in Sydney watching Channel 9 that afternoon. Apparently, my father just looked at the mother and said, "That's your boy. What an absolute bloody disgrace."
As they say, Tony, you always know the mother.
Radio is about living on the edge.
Oh, you know what I do? I start the sentence and hope that the answer will come to me. That is terrifyingly about 99% of everything I do in my job and in my career. Start it, see how it goes, hope for the best.
American Australia, Triple M.
I also do the same thing with my sex life, but that's another story. Chris Taylor with me this afternoon. Yesterday, of course, we broadcasted from Flemington for the Melbourne Cup, and we had a little bit of a phantom call is what you would call it. It was the race that the nation forgot, and we had a lot of requests for people who missed it yesterday because people in and out all day doing different things, drinking, and might have missed it. So here it is again.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the race that the nation forgot. A marvellous field of Australian celebrities assembled here today. The horses and jockeys are making their way into the barriers. And at number one, it's Matt Preston riding Gary and George's coattails. Interesting style of saddle, too. It appears to be a beanbag. Make yourself comfy, big guy. Barrier two, Malcolm Turnbull running on sheer luck. And even the horse is bucking. I think he whispered plebiscite to a gay horse. Barrier three, we see Shane Warne on top of some young filly. This is their first outing, maybe their last. Barrier four, and it's Grant Denyer on My Little Pony. It's a tiny little horse that smells of strawberries, and Grant is calling the stewards to ask for a booster seat. Barrier five, it's Pauline Hanson riding on Fear of Islam. She's arguing with the stewards, but naturally, no one knows what the f*** she's talking about, so they'll just wait till she crashes. Barrier 6, Jonathan LaPaglia is on The Other Brother, a true survivor, unless, of course, it was on a desert island, in which case it would be hamburgers. Entering Barrier 7 is Gina Reinhart, who's on Jenny Craig and looking fantastic for it. Does she own this company that I work for? No? Better not risk it. She looks incredible. I'll probably tap. Okay, let's move on. Barrier 8. We have Ida Buttrose attempting to ride Silly Sally's Supercilious Samurai Supermarket. Wow, that's just unfair. I mean, if she wins, how is she going to thank the horse? Barrier 9. Rolf Harris is on parole. No, wait. For reasons of good taste, he has been scratched. A good thing, too. This is a race for five-year-olds, after all. Barrier 10, Jackie Lambie riding, taking it upon herself to name her own horse this year. The horses are set for this 32-metre race. And they're off. Taking the lead early is sheer luck. But as we know, Malcolm Turnbull is popular at the start but fades quickly. I don't expect to see this horse finish without being stabbed by its own party. In second is Silly Sally, Super Silly Samurai Supermarket. And its jockey, Ida Buttrose, is flogging that horse harder than a carpet steamer on a morning television advertorial. In the pack, we have Gary and George's Coattails, Fear of Islam, and The Other Brother with Jackie Lambie's mare chasing its own ass again. Jenny Craig, ridden by Gina Reinhardt, is finding the going tough, but is too terrified of the mogul to slow down. But still in front of Grant Denyer's My Little Pony. But wait! As I say that, My Little Pony is on the outside making a break at a cracking pace! My God! This horse is going to go all the way! I'm not sure anything can stop Grant Denyer winning the cup now! But what's this? A monster truck has entered the course and has run over both Grant Denyer and his horse! And is now backing over him in what looks like a second attempt to ensure they are both dead. Wow. Shane Warne appears to have seen an opening on some young filly and is going hard for it. We're into the home stretch and it's Ida Buttrose on Silly Sally's Super Silly Samurai Supermarket in first, with Gary and George's Coattails second, followed by Pauline Hanson's Fear of Islam gaining. No, it's just exploded on the track. Pauline did warn us about that possibility before the race, but of course only stupid people take her seriously. The Other Brother is closing in now with Jackie Lambie's horse off the track and talking to a tree. What the actual f***? Followed by Jenny Craig, which is slimming as a favourite. And last is Sheer Luck, whose jockey Malcolm Turnbull appears to have sustained several injuries, all of them knife wounds, all of them in the back region. And as they cross the finish line, the winner is... It's Silly Sally, Super Silly Samurai Supermarket. Congratulations, Ita. A terrific race. But I don't know about you. I will not be sticking around to see her thank the sponsors. There's simply not enough daylight. Thank you for watching the American Australia Celebrity Handicap. Until next time.
Triple M's American Australia presents...
Why can't they make a toaster that doesn't burn the bread?
Why are they called hamburgers when they've got beef on them?
Why do kebabs taste so good after you've been on the piss all night?
What can't you get your head around?
Yeah, the big small problems will be solved on the show today. If you've got one, if you've got a conundrum, something you just can't wrap your head around, why does that work? How come this what? 133353 is the phone number.
You know, Mez, there were a lot of people who found it a bit odd that Bob Dylan was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. I find it odd that we haven't been awarded the Nobel Prize for Science.
That's a very good point.
For the work that we've done, can't you get your head around?
Do you think it might be because I can't spell science?
Maybe.
Right.
Your application form's really full of typos.
Yeah, they've just got what? Yeah. Scans? No, I don't think so. 133353, if you want to get involved with what can't you get your head around. Let's kick it off with, we've got Glenn there. Hello, Glenn. We've got Glenn.
How you going?
Hello, Glennie.
Very well, Glenn. What can't you get your head around?
Why is it the older we get, the gassier we get?
Oh, don't we what, Glennie? I just cut one a second ago. Chris didn't even know.
I bet he knows now.
Well, there's there's either a physiological reason or is there just a don't care factor? Like, apparently you just give less of a damn the older you get about everything. And,
yeah,
and gas might just be one of those things.
That's one of the saddest things with people aging, Glenn, isn't it? When you get to that point where your mum and dad just start doing pop-offs around you, just go, well, hang on a second. You did 30 years of that doing this, and now you're just they just let themselves go.
I used to do, at school, you had to do sort of community service, and so I worked in a nursing home. And if you're around, like, a whole room full of people who are 80, everyone's just popping off.
They're terrible.
That's a room of pop-offs.
So, Glenn, I reckon it might be a combination of physical things. Number one, I'm going to say that their sphincter, like literally, and I'm not being clever trying to use that term, is literally probably a little not as...
easily controlled.
As it used to be.
You lose control of most of your muscles, particularly some of those more subtle, agile,
absolutely.
Bile muscles.
My pelvic floor is already gone. I don't want to go into that. So I would say that also too, the gas probably builds up a bit more, Glenn, because I reckon the bacteria in the stomach would probably change with age as well. You'd start to, have less type of health.
Oh! What's he lands on the
Who knows about fart science, I do. Bam. What's the story, Liam?
Yeah, spot on, Merrick. So basically, the older you get, the longer it takes you to digest food,
yep,
which gives the intestinal bacteria more time to turn that food into flatulence.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So it's not really about luck of control.
Correct,
oh,
yeah.
It's more about just the... So it's not that they're doing it more often, they're slightly more noxious. They're more on the nose.
Because your digestive system, the older you get, it slows down.
Yeah.
It builds up. For example, you know, and this is not exact, but hypothetically, if your breakfast
If a child ate those stewed fruits,
it might equate to one fart for them.
Yeah.
But because it takes longer to digest for the older person, it might equate to three farts.
Isn't that something for us all to look forward to, though?
Yeah. Okay.
We can have a three-fart breakfast.
Very quick round table, because I know I'll get in trouble for this anyway, but we'll kick it off with you, Liam. Everybody has to do their best pensioner fart impersonation. Okay, go.
No, I don't think we should be doing this,
mate. I'll do it for everyone. Okay, that's just what it is.
I was going to go more.
Oh, that's quite good. That's quite good.
Yeah. As I said, I spent a lot of time around nursing homes when I was young.
Okay, being told to wind that up, Glenn, won't give you the opportunity. Being told to move on. Hello to David. Have we got? What's going on?
We're going to go to a song.
Are we going to a song?
Yeah, we're going to go to a song.
Okay, all right. There's so many calls.
Mez, did you just fart?
No.
Triple M's American Australia presents...
Why can't they make a toaster that doesn't burn the bread?
Why are they called hamburgers when they've got beef on them?
Why do kebabs taste so good after you've been on the piss all night?
What can't you get your head around?
Great to have your calls, Australia. Chris Taylor this afternoon. As every Wednesday, we answer the world's biggest problems. We just answered why pensioners do so many fluffs.
I don't know if it was pensioners per se.
Yeah.
It's not so about something about taking the pension welfare, therefore you start blowing off. It was more
people.
The older you get, the more you fart.
Yeah, I blame SPC canned fruits. No, I don't blame them. I encourage them, but they're probably partially responsible.
Is it just old person's revenge on everyone taking the piss out of
them
all the time?
It's
going, oh, yeah, I don't physically have the strength to punch you, but gee, I get a whiff of this.
I got a pair of pants made out of curtains. Done. Scotty, hello.
How you doing, boys?
Really
very
good, mate.
Very well.
All right, what can't you get your head around?
Right, why do... You've got your dead animal on the side of the road.
Yep.
Why does someone come along and spray paint it for someone else to come along and pick it up? Why can't he just pick it up?
Oh, Scotty!
How stupid is that?
Mate, I know exactly what you're saying, Chris. Because I ride motorbikes a lot, Scotty, out in country areas. I know what you mean. They mark them out with paint, Chris, when they find...
Like a corpse in the old cop movies where they do the boundary of the animal?
They just paint the actual animal.
Yeah, they put, like, it's usually purple, isn't it, Scotty?
Exactly, pink or purple.
Yeah, and they spray paint, you see it, you just go, dead animal, dead animal. Now, Scotty, I wasn't sure. I know that they were marking them out for somebody else to come along and pick them up. But you're right, it seems like two sets of hands to do one set of hands' work.
Inefficient.
It's a waste of taxpayers' money.
Yeah, on a motorbike, I could smell them. I don't need to see them. But you're right, mate.
This is genuinely fascinating. I'm guessing the reason they spray paint them is it quite a bright colour normally? That's to make them more
really
visible, possibly.
Yeah, yeah.
To
100%. So they can't be missed.
Wrong. Secondly, I imagine there's just...
I reckon it's a demarcation issue. That's what
in a local council. There'd be some correct way of disposing of a dead animal versus a quick fix of just getting it off the road and marking it so it's not a hazard.
I reckon it's because the road authority have got a responsibility to have them off the road and mark them, but they don't have the provision themselves. They're not allowed
to dispose of the body,
so they have to mark it out for somebody else. How's that sound to you, Scotty?
That sounds stupid to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's probably the right answer. What have we got, Liam?
Well, look, basically, when you see an animal marked, the guidelines that are being given by awarewildlife.org.au is that that's being done by the person that's actually hit the animal, not a special unit of the council or whatever government it falls under. Generally, what they say is if you hit an animal, you should pull over. And if it's been marked with spray paint or a ribbon, it indicates that it's been checked that there's no surviving young in the pouch of the animal.
Oh, okay.
Oh, but how many motorists have got spray paint in their glove box?
Or a ribbon.
Or a ribbon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I mean, I've got ribbons. I'm not an idiot.
We're all rhythmic gymnasts, so we all drive everywhere with a ribbon in our...
If a mum's driving along with two kids, is she going to get out and check?
the animal.
Yeah, good point.
Well, they're meant to. Scotty, well,
they're meant to, particularly,
not
if,
happen.
Maybe particularly if they finished calisthenics and they got all those ribbons in the car.
Maybe it's like some art project. It's like Banksy just deliberately mowing down kangaroos so he can then do a piece of art on them.
Oh, no, okay. Let's get to Dave. He's got a question. How are you, mate?
G'day, Mez. G'day, Chris. How are you going, boys?
Really good.
We're very
right.
well.
Hit us with your conundrum. What can't you get your head around?
Mate, this has baffled me for some time now, right? Now, the English language is a peculiar beast, right?
Yes.
I'll give you an example. Something that's general is something that's everyday, run-of-the-mill, everybody has one, belly button type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something that's private is exclusive, is special, is something reserved for the elite, right?
Mm-hmm.
So answer me this. Why then, in the army, is the general, the big guy, and the private...
Uh-huh.
The everyday run-of-the-mill grunt.
I don't think I know, because I think generally they bugger the privates. So, okay.
Allegedly.
Okay. That was just, right. I apologise for several reasons.
Look, it's a really nice observation. Look, there's only two possible explanations of this. One, that it's just a trick of language and that there's no relationship between the common usage of the words general and private in regard to the military usage. The other explanation is that there is a connection and that some historical quirk of the naming of these ranks has somehow said that the general needs to be seen as the more all-encompassing, accessible, available, you know, figurehead, and then the privates are meant to be more individual soldiers. I don't think that's right. My sense is that my first instinct was probably correct. It's just a pun, and it's not really, there's no relationship between those two words as more general meaning.
I reckon it's got something to do with, it'd be from a French derivation. I reckon it might come from another part of Europe.
General.
And it would be, you know, maybe private is, you know, privy. I don't know what it is, but I reckon it's probably from another language.
You're dancing around. It's got to do with language. Basically, it derived from BC, the Athenians. The rank was called strategos or strategos.
I've played that game. I've also played Battleship.
And that literally means army leader, and it usually translates to general.
Yeah, okay.
Because he's the leader of many, general?
Like, yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
All right, Dave's that answer. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, not too bad. Like, the thing that always gets me is that in the Navy, the big man's the admiral. So, I mean, that sounds right.
That
you
makes
know?
More sense.
And in the army, it's actually the field marshal, but that makes more sense because, like, if he's out in the field, he's marshalling people. It sounds like a little bit of a job for a private.
Yes.
Oh, look,
the armed forces are very confusing, aren't they?
God.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
No, you're okay.
Happy to be of service.
We do this.
Australia has the big pineapple, the big banana, and now, thanks to Triple M, it's got the big question. The only difference is you don't have to spend 6 hours in the car to get to the big question.
No, we're going to get to the big question straight away. Have you been seriously lost? I don't mean like, oh, God, I can't remember. Was it level 4? Or level 5, I left the Hyundai.
We've all been in Westfield car parks at Christmas.
Yes.
Of course we've been lost.
Having said that, that is one of the most distressing moments of your entire life. And you go, I have lost a vehicle. I don't even remember where I parked it. And you do that thing with a button clicker on your keys.
On every car.
And it's not lighting up. And you go, I can't even blame it on the missus because she's not here. This is the worst day.
Now, I imagine you as a father, you'd probably be more stressed if you couldn't find your car than if you lost one of your kids.
Oh, wow.
The way you talk about your car.
But are you serious?
Yeah.
Not even close. They're on par. On par.
I guess you would have left the kid in the car. So
in the car.
If you lose one, you lose both.
Yeah, right. That's why I don't need the button clicker. I just go, kids, until they answer. Oh, I'm only joking. 133-533 is the number to call. Have you been seriously lost? And I mean like lost in the bush, lost in the jungle, somewhere, you know, you've had a breakdown of a vehicle or you've been somewhere, you've walked off track. And I know that we've spoken to people on the show before, Chris, who have been rescued. And some of those times they've been rescued from really inhospitable places. But I'm talking about genuinely, what's it like being lost where you just go, I have no idea where I am
now. Actually, I have been certainly in a helpless position, just broken down in a place with no mobile reception, no phones for miles. And that was a genuinely sort of scary.
Whereabouts was that? I mean, you don't know because you were lost.
No, well, it was sort of rural New South Wales. And there was the nearest phone or it was very Wolf Creeky.
Yeah, gets Atney Cobar maybe.
I was just, it was out near Broken Hill, sort of.
Yeah, yeah, I was gonna, that's not far.
And
that's where my folks are from.
And I was genuinely anxious about, and it was, you know, getting up towards nightfall, but thankfully, finally another car did go past. Yeah. We were able to flag down and borrow their phone.
Yeah, you're
it
lucky. Did work.
But I can imagine if it was a bit later at night and there was no one out there, you'd be really stressed.
Mate, you'd be lucky to survive at the pubs in Broken Hill, let alone the outback. We're saying this because there's a young guy who has, an Australian guy, who's just been returned to safety by Malaysian authorities, by the army, mm-hmm. after being found after 2 weeks in a Malaysian jungle. Just, he went out there as a backpacking experience. His name's Andrew, and Andy went out backpacking.
He went out to find himself.
Went out to find himself. This is the greatest irony search of all time. Went out to find himself, got lost. What does that tell you, Andy? Stay at home, know where you are.
Sometimes you don't need to find yourself.
No, sometimes, you know, just be Andy. Just go, oh, I'm Andrew Gaskell from Tasmania. Done.
When the rescuers are coming, would you go, no, I don't want you to find me. I'm here to find myself. Please.
Turn around.
I
appreciate it. Yeah. If you could leave some nasi goreng, that would be fantastic. 133353, lots of calls coming through.
This is the guy, didn't he survive on just by eating ferns?
Yes. He ate ferns. Like, dude, there are so many things you get to before you get into ferns.
But it's Malaysia, so there would have been satay ferns.
Oh, you'd hope so.
Yeah, bit of roti. Some of
that, oh, that delicious bread they make. Oh, what's that stuff?
Roti, yum.
Good times. I'd eat a fern in that. Give us a call now, 133353. Have you been seriously proper lost? Chris Taylor with me this afternoon. We're talking about this guy, Andrew Gaskell, who has just been found in a national park in Malaysia after being missing for 2 weeks. He's from Tasmania. Obviously, they just thought he'd walked to the mainland. Turns out, no, he was in Malaysia. They found him. He's safe. He ate ferns. Why would you eat ferns? You'd eat it. You start off with an orangutan and see how you go. Anyway, you're desperate. We're asking you, though, I want 33353, have you been properly lost? Like, to the point where you just go, hang on, I might not get out of this kind of situation.
Yeah, this is serious.
Yeah, this is not like, you know, when you've had a few cans and you've accidentally tried to put the keys in the neighbor's door and you've gone, oh, I'm lost.
This is so lost that Harry and Miller has taken an interest in your story and doing a deal for the Channel 7 telly movie. That's that kind of lost.
Yep. Okay, so we've got Chris on the line. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate.
Okay, you've been proper lost.
I was traveling in South America with the missus and decided to go for a walk. Like on a trail, and there'd been quite a few landslides in the area.
Okay.
And you know, as you do. And I convinced the missus to climb down a landslide and try and find the path because it came to an abrupt end. And we got lost in the jungle for like 12 hours because everything had just been washed away. There was no path, there was no bridge, there was no nothing. So we spent 12 hours just wandering along the river, just trying to find our way back.
Which country, Chris?
So it's in Panama.
Oh, great. Panama. Okay. I mean, you didn't at any stage think to call on Van Halen to help you? I mean, Panama!
And so, firstly, like, how anxious and stressed were you?
I was pretty stressed, freaking out about it, but I had to try and, like, play it cool because obviously the missus was there and she was getting really quite antsy, so I was trying to be the calm, collected type, but I was bricking it at points.
Chris, what were you thinking about for food? Obviously, you know, if it started to extend its time, were you thinking, oh my God, you know, we're going to, after we've run out of ferns, I'm going to have to eat my missus?
Well, you know, I wouldn't be the first time.
Oh, okay, thank you, Chris.
You had our sympathy there briefly. Yeah. And now, yeah.
Steve, hello.
How you going, guys?
Really good, mate. Talking about being lost, can you beat 12 hours in Panama?
Ah, easy, man. A mate and myself decided we wanted to go for a hunting trip up in the Northern Territory 30 years ago. We jumped in my Land Cruiser and kept driving and found a place called Hell's Gate, which is on the border of Northern Territory in North Queensland.
Sounds welcome.
And, it was awesome. But until we got lost, we started chasing some scrub bulls and wild pigs. Before we knew it, we were just lost and bogged out in the middle of a salt, like a flat plain.
Yeah.
And we were lost and bogged for a week.
Oh.
It was awesome spending every night in the mozzie-infested bogs with my mate in the Land Cruiser.
How did you get out, Steve? Were you rescued?
No. We ended up every day it was the same thing. Get up early in the morning and go and cut a tree down with an axe and bury it and winch ourselves out. So every, you know, probably 3 or 4 hours we were doing a few hundred metres until, you know, a few kilometres away I could see a cloud of dust and I realised there must be a truck or something over there. And sure enough, there was a truck. So we just made our way towards that truck and got ourselves out and we're okay.
Extraordinary. But that was a week before you saw that truck. What did you do for food?
We were lucky enough. We were obviously a little bit prepared. We had 80 litres of fuel, 80 litres of fresh water, and we had a ton of, you know, canned food. And because we were on a hunting trip, we obviously had firearms, so we whacked a few wild pigs and scrub bulls, and, yeah, we're okay.
Steve, I mean, obviously they're vital requirements for survival in the outback, but you also have a stash of dirty magazines, because, I mean, that's just another one of those elements that you would never go into the bush in the Northern Territory without some filth.
I had my mate with me.
Okay, that could be taken such the wrong way, Stephen. I know you didn't mean that way, but we're all going to laugh a little bit like you did. Okay, let's get to Robert. Hello, Rob.
How you going, buddy?
Really good, mate. Talking about being lost, proper lost. Where did you get lost?
Moreton National Park in the Southern Highlands.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now, that's how lost can you get given that, first of all, how long, Rob?
6 days and seven nights.
6 days and seven nights in the Southern Highlands?
Right in the middle of winter. It snowed the whole time. Got down to -6. We were soaking wet. Right. Had nothing to eat for the whole time we were there.
Oh, my God. So tell us the story. How did you get in this predicament?
Had a mate come down from Queensland, and we decided to go down to our normal swimming hole and then went a little bit further to do some circle work. Mm. And the gearbox blew up in the car, and it was quicker to walk to Kangaroo Valley than to come back the same way, and we never made it. Somebody moved the sign. And the helicopter picked us up 108 k's away from where the car broke down.
So you walked 108 kilometres away?
In the wrong direction, yeah.
So, and Dan, I'm familiar with the area. I've been motorbike riding through that part of the country. As I've been in a lot of parts. And I don't understand how you didn't bump into bed and breakfast or something like that. Because it's a swingers party for that matter.
Someone trying to sell bric-a-brac.
Yeah. Chris, yesterday, of course, a broadcast from Flemington for the Melbourne Cup. Had a great time with Lawrence Mooney. Really enjoyed ourselves. And we thought we put together a terrific show. There's been a number of complaints about the material that was broadcast to air yesterday.
Even the horses were complaining.
There was a lot of complaints. Mm. I'm not going to lie. And so what I'm going to do is, defiantly, I'm going to give you the highlights package of that material that caused those complaints. Because that's the sort of guy that I am. I never know when to quit being an idiot. But I got some great feedback from people who did enjoy the show, which is what we do it for. And if you want to go and have a look at some of the pictures of the day, because there's a massive celebrities, there's some really good people on the show yesterday, you can go to Facebook or our Instagram account and you can check in there. And also to, you know, hit us up on Twitter at any stage, as Brad Jones has done on Twitter, who has written, and I'll just read this right out of the Twitter page, "Why wasn't it in the press that KD Lang was at the race yesterday?"
Right. Is that a reference to your...
No, well played, Brad. Well played. You know what? I'm a bit tired today, a little bit hungover. I'm a little bit emotionally unstable. That was a very, very good hit there. Nicely played. Slightly cruel, but too bloody accurate to ignore. Here's some of the shenanigans that went on yesterday. Shane Jacobson, hello mate, how are you?
I'm fantastic, how are you boys?
Very good indeed.
I'm going to say it, I've never said this. There was confusion as to whether Kenny was real. It's not, it's a mockumentary. But the truth is, after we finished making the film and before the film came out, I actually did the site management contract for the toilets here at the Melbourne Cup.
Really?
There you go, you heard it first.
Racing royalty, Emma Freeman.
Honestly, my first cup wasn't until I was about 15 because it's a place of work for my family. But I do remember the first year because we had the favourite horse called Mummify.
Yep.
He was scratched the morning of the cup, so I came along to the cup devastated that we didn't have a runner.
And who won that year?
Ah, some shit piece of you.
Joined by comedian Tommy Little, looking smooth, champ.
Oh, gentlemen, I mean, I'm not rocking as much pink as you, Mez. And no, it is a bold fashion choice, but it's really working for you.
Is it? Do you know how uncomfortable I am naturally wearing pink?
Does it challenge your masculinity?
It does, massively.
Is that why you got your fly open?
Oh, it's
And what do you think?
Because there's a lot of pink.
Yeah, too much.
Not as much as he'd like.
Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull.
I don't know what I'm going to have a flutter on, but my father Bruce always said to me, don't bet with money you can't afford to lose and you won't notice when you lose it. So I'm just going to drop 50K on the cup.
Okay, and, just a quiet 50K.
Yeah, just a quiet 50K and try and bring it quaddy home.
Billy Slater, how are you, mate?
Good, thanks, boys.
My wife, we actually met at Pony Club. You'll have a bit of fun with this.
Oh,
Pony
nice.
Club.
Here we go.
Yeah, I knew
here
that was coming. But yeah,
Pony Club, you don't sound like a creep at all there.
Yeah. Both you and your wife own riding crops.
Matt Preston himself. What about tomorrow? A few people are going to wake up with sore heads. What's your go-to hangover cure?
Shit, shower, shave, egg and bacon sandwich.
Bang! Right. Can you have the egg and bacon sandwich whilst you're doing the other three?
No.
Right, okay,
absolutely
good.
No, in that order. It's very much in that order.
Comedian Dave Thornton.
How's that?
We just nabbed you walking out of the bathrooms. How are you feeling? You look really confident.
Okay, Dave's just come out of the Jeff Hugel Memorial Disabled Toilet, and he's having a terrific time.
God, how bad's a hay fever on track, guys?
Oh, isn't
it is
awful?
Disgusting.
All these flowers have made so many celebrities sneezy today, haven't they?
God. Mate, oh, sorry about that. Washing powder just on the lapel.
There's been lots of little audio tidbits this week from the races as people enjoy themselves. And, you know, some of them have been people who have had too much to drink and have got on the news for it.
Yep.
But there's an interesting one that came from Kembla Grange. I think it was race four or thereabouts.
Kembla Grange.
Kembla Grange.
Is that like Penfold's Grange?
Not as refined.
Right.
But listen to this call, Chris.
All right, viewers, just to bring you up to date with some news that's just coming in here, some very big news. We've got a delay leading into race number four at Kembla Grange. Look, I'm going to be very, very honest about what's happened here. One of the jockeys is locked in the bathroom here at Kembla Grange. And they're out. A round of applause. The jockey has escaped from the bathroom.
Has been freed. Yeah, that's
a big round of applause. So we've got a delay here.
Couldn't reach the lock.
Exactly.
So they had to slide in a brick so they could stand up. And
but surely the stalls, most stall designs, they could just roll under the door. The jockey could walk under the little gap in the door.
She could dance underneath it.
How long had the jockey been in the stall before anyone noticed he was missing?
I don't know.
Like just 4 years?
Hi, I'm stuck in here. Hi. I think there's a man who's been using helium in the bathroom.
No, race four, Kembla Grange.
Fallen down the bowl itself.
They didn't know why they didn't bring in his little seat that sits over the top of the seat with the little handles. Where's my little handle seat?
Oh, we can flush him out.
Look, it is kind of funny that we're laughing at him, but I know the pain all too well of being locked in a bathroom, Chris.
With a jockey. I know. It's awful.
Many years ago, my girlfriend and I were house-sitting for some friends of hers, and they had a really great house. It was a two-story house, and they said, can you look after it for a week? And we said, no drums. Got there. Anyway, for some reason, I said, I'm going to go and have a shower in the downstairs bathroom. She said, all right, no drums. Anyway, go in there, have a shower, and I get out, and I think, all right, I go to leave the bathroom, and she's locked the door. And I go, oh, very funny. It was a big, heavy timber door, and I went, very funny. Mm. There's no windows to this bathroom. And I said, no, seriously, open it up. And no response. Nah, come on, seriously, open it up. This is getting a bit tedious. Anyway, after about 15 minutes, I'm losing my mind. I'm going, no, seriously, you've got to open up the door because I'm getting irritated now. I'm hungry. I need to put on some clothes. Open the door and I'm swearing and carrying on. No response. And I just could feel her on the other side of the door just laughing at how aggravated I was getting. And I said, right, that's it. I'm going to kick this door. I'm going to kick this. So I started kicking the door. I said, if the hinge breaks, it's your fault. This is not my fault now. This is your friend's house. And don't make me. This has gone on half an hour. I couldn't kick the door and it's too heavy sit. I'm just going, this is unbelievable. I said, why would you lock me in the bathroom for half an hour? I'm screaming and carrying on. And then I put my hand on the door and I pulled it and it was, I'd been pushing against it and it was a pull door. It was never locked.
It was a pull.
And that's what I got.
And Georgie wasn't in the house, probably. She goes, Mez won't lock himself in. It's clearly a pull door. How long do you reckon you're in for?
Half an hour, 45 minutes. I just lost my mind. And then I went up to her and I said, did you not hear me yelling for help in the bathroom? She said, no, why would I? And I went, no reason. But don't go down and have a look at the door there for any reason at all. One of Australia's premier crime reporters is Channel 9's Simon Boder. He's got a brand new book out called Deadline. He joins me in the studio now. And it says on the cover, Simon, Australia's top crime reporter. Does it take a certain type of character and personality to be a crime reporter? Because, you know, being a reporter generally, you know, you're going to come across a myriad of different types of events and things to report on, from war to happy stories, cats up trees, the whole lot.
Yep.
Crime reporting, you get to come across, you know that you're going to come across some pretty grim stuff at times.
Yeah, I got to say, it does get to you over time, dealing with that much trauma and grief. I've been doing it for 30-odd years. I've been lucky that I've been able to meet some wonderful people in the course of that. People like from the Homicide Victim Support Group or Stuart Diver, people who have lifted me when I've needed lifting. And there's no doubt in the world that, you know, I dread when I'm given a story because invariably it's going to involve someone's trauma, someone's grief, someone's ordeal. And that's not a lot of fun.
Do you try to keep yourself personally extricated from that? Try and keep yourself back from it?
I think we do all try to do that, but that's very hard.
Yeah.
I think I'd have to be honest and say I give a little bit of myself to each one of those sort of stories. That's why I do a lot of volunteer work with the Homicide Victim Support Group.
Yep.
That's why I do volunteer work with White Ribbon. In a way, I think it's important that we as journalists and crime reporters, journalists just generally, give back a little because we take a hell of a lot from people. And
how important is this, as a crime reporter, is it for you to have a moustache?
Crucial. I mean, 1970s, you always had a moustache. It was quite interesting.
You've shaved it off at times, though, haven't you?
I had a moustache when I first started in journalism and when I left high school.
Does it make you better? Does it make you stronger as a journalist?
Without a doubt. It was interesting. I had to MC a Homicide Victim Support Group event the other day, and there was a lot of conversations about my moustache, and someone referred to me as a porn star, and I said, well, yes, I might have the moustache, but I don't know if I've got the other attributes required to fulfill that role.
You also look like a pilot, but you can't fly a plane.
Well,
so
you can.
The same thing, mate.
You can, as long as you don't have the handlebars.
Yeah, exactly.
The handlebars. No, I don't have handlebars.
I think you've got pilot-issue moustache, actually. That thing could land a plane. You couldn't, but that moustache you're wearing
I reckon it could.
Can I ask you about something that I've heard about, and I don't know whether or not this is true or not, that from time to time, the media and the police collaborate. If they have a suspect who they think, particularly if it's in the same family, there's been a victim, they have a suspect that they collaborate with the media, the police collaborate, to put them front and square on television because it is a way for the body language to show to kind of, it doesn't show evidence, but what it does is it can reinforce suspicions or throw suspicions around for the police because people act differently once they're in front of the media. And so they offer up too much information, not enough information, and that gives the police a hunch to work off because particularly in a family, they just go, yeah, grieving mothers don't act like that.
It's called crocodile tears.
Okay.
And I've seen them.
Yep.
I've seen press conferences which have been held. Now, I don't know if there's a collaboration there between media and the police. The police, no doubt, use the media. So if you're an investigator and you suspect the mother or the father, and you've got the media banging at the police door saying, we want you to put the mother or the father up because we need to see family reaction.
Yep.
The investigator's going to sit back and say, right, I'm going to put these people up. Let's see how they perform with a few cameras in front of them and the questions asked. And that can often be, I mean, there was a famous case just not long ago, a bloke by the name of Sandor Sikos, who has just been released from jail. He, his wife and two young sons were murdered. He attended their funeral. He cried at a press conference. He was subsequently charged with their murder. So it is a very useful tool that detectives, investigators know that it's out there because the media is hungry for that. The media will say, yes, if you're going to let us interview these people, we'll interview them.
Simon, just before you go, I am going to make you very, very sad by telling you this, that the way we're moving as a society, in 10 years' time, news will be reported purely with emojis.
Well, they're going to have to do an emoji of Simon Boder with a moustache.
Moustache.
How's that going to work? I reckon that'll go pretty good.
Signing off with your emoji face, moustache. Simon Boder, your new book, Deadline, Australia's top crime reporter, is out now in all good bookstores and a couple of dodgy ones as well.
Indeed.
Thanks for your time, mate.
Good on you, Merrick. Thank you.
Merrick has clocked off after another hard-working day.
It's almost like a real job I've got.
That Merrick and Australia podcast was brought to you by understandinsurance.com.au. Protect your family and your home by preparing for bushfire season now. For tips, visit understandinsurance.com.au.